Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
We're here live at Mix 11 with Laurent Bougnon. Did I get that close?
Fantastic.
Unbelievable. That's it. That's all I needed to do today, then.
Okay, so see you guys, and thank you have
for,
a good mix.
Thank
right?
you for joining me. We were talking just before we started about some of the changes and some of what's coming in Silverlight 5.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, Silverlight 5 is pretty exciting. So we have the Silverlight 5 beta, which was released with a couple of really exciting changes. Probably the most exciting, and I would say probably the most spectacular, is the whole three-dimension thing, right? The whole 3D support that they added. And this is very spectacular. We saw really a lot of that in the keynote, right? With the Blue Angels, for example, where you can really take a plane, rotate it and everything, where John Papa did his demo with a house that you can also rotate and change texture. And the thing which was pretty amazing is that you can see how fast the whole thing is, right? When he was navigating inside the house and the textures were very complex, you had cracks in the concrete and everything. And he was able to just navigate very fast because they optimized that for speed. To be clear, this is not WPF 3D, which they ported to Silverlight. This is something different, okay? It's much more XNA in Silverlight, more or less.
Yes, and that's one of the things that's interesting is that you can, the good news is you can combine XNA and Silverlight, but of course, yep. If you're a Silverlight programmer, that says, do I need, how much XNA do I need to learn in order
that's
to
do that's a fair point. And in fact, you know, it affects me because I'm not a 3D programmer, right? That's not what I do. So my question, the first time I heard about it was, okay, how much of that am I going to be able to use? Now, the good news is that the way that you guys handle that, and when I say you guys, I mean the Microsoft Silverlight team, right? Is, in my opinion, the right way to do things. They provided a low-level framework, which is, you know, things that the community cannot do, was done, right? And then you have a striving community of 3D programmers who provide high-level solutions. One is Einar Ingebretsen, who does a Boulder tool, which is a tool where you can create 3D scenes, apply texture, apply lighting and everything, and then can export to different formats, including now Silverlight 5. He just added support to that. Another tool, I was yesterday on Channel 9 Live with people from Archetype, are the guys who did the house demo. And he was saying, you know, basically he took a format which is pretty standard, and he just applied that to Silverlight.
He imported it into XAML, into the
surface, yes. Which is used to represent the 3D thing. So the way it works is really pretty cool. You add an element in the XAML, so you have control on this element, the positioning, it's a surface on which the 3D is going to be rendered. The rendering of the 3D itself is done in code, so you don't do that in XAML, obviously, right? Because that wouldn't work. So the code that you use to do the XAML, to do the scene and everything, is much closer from XNA than it is from XAML, definitely. Mm-hmm. It is C#, though. And there, at this level, you have the possibility for those people who do high-level libraries to just plug a high-level library there to handle the hard stuff, like the shaders and the textures and the, you know, all that, maybe also some animations and how do you move the cameras and these things. And then for us as you know, newbies in that field, you will just use those high-level libraries and you will be able to choose the one that you prefer, which is always nice. So I think it's a great approach, honestly. And as I said, it was very, you know, spectacular to see that on the screen. I think everybody remembers at the Silverlight Firestarter when we saw, you know, Scott Guthrie in 3D. And this demo was made in a very short time by experienced people, right? Definitely. So you had to know what they were doing. But the point was that they were experienced in 3D for other platforms, and then suddenly they came to Silverlight 5 and said, okay, it's the same, so let's do it, you know?
Yes, and as you say, the high-level frameworks that will be produced will make this much more available to programmers who are not necessarily expert at that, but enough to be able to prototype out what they need and then bring in the expertise they need as they move forward.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. In the difference to WPF 3D, was the approach was very different. The approach was to say, let's provide a high-level, you know, abstraction of all those CD things, it was a reasonable approach, I think, at the time. But the result is that a lot less people are using that because this is yet another thing that you need to learn. It's not you know, something which is already existing, for which you already have experts, right? Yeah.
And this does bring in the industry experts as they exist. So that was certainly one of the exciting things in Silverlight 5. But you've been looking at Silverlight 5 for a while. Mm-hmm. And are there other areas of Silverlight 5 that you feel are really need to be called out?
Yeah, some things are less spectacular, which is probably why they didn't show that on stage. Because how do you want to, you know, like woo a 1,500 people room with, you know, data binding, debugging, for example?
It's, I don't know, you can woo me with that, but okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you know what it takes, right? You know that, oh my God, this is really going to help us so much. Or other things like the whole, you know, the find ancestor, we are going to explain what it is. But there are stuff basically that are exciting us because we do, you know, we do applications with Silverlight for so long that we see that, okay, we always had to find a workaround to make it work, and now we don't have to anymore. So those things are really improvement more in the line of business type programming, right? Where, you know, the first thing which is really exciting for us is the data binding debugging. I name it data binding debugging on purpose and not XAML debugging, as it is sometimes sold, because this is really what you debug is really the data binding, right? Not, for example, a static resource or an animation, you know, whatever. What people could imagine. So what you do is that you can just put a breakpoint in your data binding. And this is very precious because God knows that finding an error in a data binding is very hard. Data bindings are so loosely coupled that they won't throw an exception at runtime. So the only way that you have to find the error is, first of all, to notice that there is an error, which is not always easy because the application doesn't crash. You just see that suddenly, oh, I have a string which is missing somewhere, or I have a number which is missing somewhere, right? Or this button doesn't react when I click on it. But that's hard to find. And the second thing is that it's hard to find why. And you have an indication, you know, in the output window when you debug, which says, okay, there is a data error. But if you have 1,000 bindings, it's actually normal to be an error because it just means that the data source is not ready yet, right? So debugging that was hard, and now we have the possibility to really use the debugger, place a breakpoint in the XAML, which is something that, you know, is very new, right? Even in WPF, you cannot do that yet, right? And then after that, debug to find what is the cause of the error. Why is my binding not triggering?
Right, and not only will it hit the breakpoint, but you can dive down and look at the call stack, and you can look at what's in the binding, and then even as I understand, you can click through to the method where the binding, to the property where the binding is.
Yes, exactly. Well, everything which is, of course, your own code, right? Like a normal debugging. The experience of debugging the data binding is very, very similar to what you would have if you debug a property getter or property setter or this kind of thing. So that's really great, and this is going to save us so much time. So that's a huge productivity booster. Another thing which you mentioned, which is... which really sounds super boring when you say that, but which is really very nice for people who, you know, who do these kind of applications, is the find ancestor mode for bindings. And what it does is that when you create a binding, you always have to say where does the value come from and where does it go, right? So you have a source and a target. And for the source, you have different ways to specify the source. One way would be to say, I'm going to say source equals static resource, my resource, for example. And then you use that object. Or you can say element name equals my grid, for example. And then you take the actual width of the grid or whatever we could imagine.
Yes.
And then what you have in WPF, which is really cool, is the relative source. And relative source can allow you to do some very, very tricky things. And relative source was brought to Silverlight 4 with some modes. And pretty much the only mode that you have in Silverlight 4 right now is mode equals self, where you say, I'm going to do something in relation to myself. And for example, I can say, okay, I'm going to do something. If you're in a grid, you're going to say, you know, relative source equals self. And then the path is the actual width. And I'm going to observe the actual width of myself, right? So that's cool. But another thing which is even cooler is that now with Silverlight 5 in the beta, you can actually walk the tree of visual elements. So you can say, if I'm in a grid and I know this grid is inside, let's imagine that you are in the data template, and in the control template, and the control template has a grid and has a text box, for example. And then you want to specify something in relation to the button which this control template represents, right? It's super hard to do because the name scope is different, so you cannot set element name equals. So basically, the only way that you have to do is to walk the tree. You are in my text box, which is in the grid, which is actually in the button through the templating. And now with relative source, you can say, I want to find my ancestor of type button. And you can even say, and maybe not the first one, but the second one, for example. So you can specify how high you want to go in the tree. So as I said, that sounds amazingly boring, probably, for people who never used that. But it opens really the door to amazing possibilities where you need to write a lot less code behind to do those things. Because right now, the only way that we have to do things is really to go in the code behind and say, okay, I'm going to take that and find my ancestor.
One of the themes that I've been hearing from a lot of Silverlight programmers here is that Silverlight 5 represents a maturation of Silverlight. That this is now a framework that is reaching some level of maturity where we're not seeing such dramatic innovation, but we're seeing a fleshing out of a full development framework.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I think it started with Silverlight 4 already, and we see that in the industry very well. In Silverlight 3, when we were talking to clients in Silverlight 3, we were advising them to choose WPF unless they wanted to do something which was only possible in Silverlight, like, for example, running on a Mac. With Silverlight 4, we started changing that a bit, and we said, you know, maybe it's better if you start in Silverlight, and then if there is something that you can only do in WPF, then you should choose WPF, right? Which, by the way, became also what Microsoft is recommending now. They rather say, start in Silverlight, and then later you might have to change to WPF if you really have something which you cannot do. Now, with Silverlight 5, the amount of things that you cannot do is shrinking more than it was in Silverlight 4. And the nice thing is that this critical moment in the project where suddenly you realize that maybe I should rather convert that to a WPF operation, which is not really that hard, but it's also, you know, an added expense in the project, right? So you want to avoid that. This moment is really, the chances that it comes are much smaller now because of the new things that are added, of the maturation, of also the, you know, the level of compatibility with WPF has been improved. That's very exciting, really.
Another thing that's been a highlight here at Mix has been a fleshing out of what's going to be in the next release of the phone, of Windows Phone, it was announced that the code name is Mango, and it was announced that within a month, tools for Mango will be available.
Exactly.
And that Mango itself will be available this year.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, we have to be careful about available this year, right? Because there is always this discussion between when Microsoft makes the update available, it's still not on the phones, right? So that's something which is a little bit...
We do our part, and then the phone company does theirs.
Well, there is a process, right? And the process starts at Microsoft. There is a big milestone in Microsoft, which is code complete and release, and congrats on that when it happens, you know? And then there is a delivery system, right? And that takes time. So we want to be careful about naming dates, I think. But definitely, Mango is for developers is going to be totally ready this year, so we can, you know, start working on that already. The tools, by the way, we need to talk about the tools because, oh my God, the amount of work that you guys did in the tooling to allow us to do things like, for example, setting a location in the emulator. Taking the emulator and shaking it, which is impossible now. You know, when you want to add a shake feature to your phone and you don't have a phone device, and I had to do that a few times in some of my applications. Without the device, you cannot do it because you cannot debug that it is actually going to shake, right? Also, things like orientation for the phone. So when you take the phone and you make a game and then you want to, you know, rotate the phone in one direction or the other, super hard, right?
The work that the tools team did on the emulator is really quite extraordinary, and I think people are really responding to what you can now do with the emulator. And specific to what you were mentioning is that you can mimic a shake. You can also, for geolocation, you can say, my location just changed to this other location.
Yeah, and you can do that live, which is very impressive. You can simulate that you're walking, for example. So you can just move the thing, the cursor around, and then you will the events will fire in your application, so you can handle those events and do that. So that's super exciting. So the tooling, great. You know, I mean, the tooling is already the best in the market. I think everybody says that, and it's just became a little bit better, right? Or a lot better. So really kudos on the team doing that. And I have to say, you know, I was surprised to see the release, because I did a little bit of work on the tools back then. I mean, a few months ago, in the user experience, I helped them to, you know, to just check it out and maybe how should we do that. And I had no idea that the tools were ready. So that was a big surprise when I saw that on the screen. I was like, oh, wow, you know, we can do work with that, right? So really cool work. Another thing which is super exciting for the phone is the whole access to sensors, which is going to be improved tremendously, and especially access to the camera, which we have been wanting for a long time. And when I say access to the camera, you can now, from your application, change to the camera application, have the user take the picture, so it needs some explaining, go back, have the user accept the picture, which means that he will go back to the application, and then you have access to the stream of a static picture, right? While in Mango, what they announce is that you will have access to the raw stream of the picture of the camera.
Yes, and having access to the raw stream opens up a great many possibilities.
Exactly.
One of the ones that we saw on stage was for using with barcode reading.
That's one possibility which is kind of painful now to do, because it's just not the experience that the user wants, right? Especially the fact that you cannot really tell to the user, hey, you moved the picture, it cannot be recognized. So this is a little bit painful now. With a new API, you will be able now to really import that picture directly, you know, the stream, right, directly in your application, and do the recognition until you're satisfied, and then take the picture and save it, right? So that's really a great feature. Now, the feature for which I'm personally much more excited, I mean, you know, even more excited, I would say, is the augmented reality field, which is something that nowadays is really, I mean, this is the future, right? We are living in the future.
And for me, I just can't wait. I think the more augmented reality applications that come out, the better.
Yeah, it's really pretty amazing, because suddenly your phone stops being, you know, a computer. It's become a window on the world, right? And you will be able to get, you know, we can imagine all kinds of things, but like if you're in a foreign city, which I do a lot because I do a lot of traveling, I come to the US and I'm from Europe. So when I'm here, for example, and I look for my way and I'm not totally sure where I am, maybe suddenly I don't have GPS reception for a reason or another, because maybe I'm indoors or whatever, I can just point my phone to a landmark and have this landmark being recognized, and they will tell me, for example, you are here, you should go there, or they will maybe give me some information. I'm a history freak, so I love to know about historical places. And then suddenly you can point your phone somewhere and they will say, okay, I recognize that you are at this place and this happened here 500 years ago. You know, well, in the US, maybe not, maybe 200 years ago. But in Europe, 1,000 years ago? Just kidding.
I'm not going to pick up that bait. No, I'm just going to let that go by. But you'll come visit us up in New England, where we have a little bit of history.
Exactly. I will go to the historical place of the earth. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I love, like being in Philadelphia, for example, I love it. And even being in Seattle, where basically the, you know, it's just like a side track. But I love Seattle because it's just so new. And that you can still see what was built in the first place, you know. I mean, you still have the marks that were really there when there was a big fire, you know. So I love these kind of things. But, yeah, it's just a stab from a European to the U.S.
Sure. The Native American Association will be contacting you, no problem.
Absolutely. And God knows that those guys have really a thriving history, much older than my own country. So, no, I will be happy to talk to them. But seriously, right, the augmented reality thing is something that we have been very, very excited about at Identity Mine, because this is the kind of thing, the kind of look forward to the future that is really, you know, motivating us to, you know, to do our work. And when we saw the phone, the first version of the phone, we did a few research and, okay, could we do something there? And eventually we said, you know, it's too hard. It's really not going to be a natural user experience, right? And while now it's really becoming natural. So that's something which is super exciting. another feature which was shown, which is interesting, and I think it's especially interesting to people who have experience in the mobile field, because they have been programming like that for some time already. And right now, if you want to save things on the phone, you have the possibility to do it, obviously, with isolated storage and all. But it requires a little bit more work, because basically you're acting on files directly, right?
Well, unless you use a third party, such as Sterling or one of
such
the other databases.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And one thing that they announced now is that you will have SQLC edition on the phone, which, as far as I understand, the feature is doesn't mean that you can create a database on the computer and put it on your phone. What it means is that you can do a code-first approach, where basically from your code, if you have to save something, you can create the database and write to it in the phone directly. And the nice thing is that you will have a link queue to access that, which link queue being...
Right, and that is key, is that, and I think that went by a little fast for a lot of the folks who were listening when this was announced, is that we're talking not only about having database structure and the ability to save and persist a more complex structure, but that you can address this and query this with link. That's
exactly
a huge breakthrough.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a big fan of link, and I use that a lot, not just for object access, but also because it allows you to do fluent programming and a lot of things, right? And also the whole dynamic link is very exciting, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, when you want to do data access and you're not a stored procedure expert, being able to do that in your code with strongly typed code, right, where you have IntelliSense, you don't have to type a string which is interpreted, but you really type something, you do a dot, and then you get the list of features of methods that you have. You can do your filters, you can do your ordering, you can do all that. That's really something which is precious. And for me, being a programmer with quite some experience, but I never worked really with database much, to be honest, because I was always a client-side programmer. When I discovered Link Queue, or however you want to pronounce that, quite some time ago, actually I saw that in Switzerland the first time Scott Guthrie came to make a demo. And of course, when you see Scott Guthrie doing a demo, you have the feeling that, okay, it's so easy, because this guy rocks, right? But after that, I went back home and I tried it the first time, and I was really amazed to see, oh yeah, that is easy. I don't have to remember my SQL, because I have that, and people are going to despise me for saying that and say I'm probably a bad programmer or whatever, but I do rely on IntelliSense quite a lot for things, because I just don't have space to remember everything in my head, So
I'm getting you off that hook, because I think if you're a bad programmer, then the rest of us are in deep trouble. So I don't buy that.
Well, thanks. But the fact is that, yeah, I do like my tooling, and I've had some discussion with Charles Petzl about that. And, because he's a big fan of really understanding how the compiler is working, etc. And I totally respect that. I think it's really important. But at the same time, if I do have access to Visual Studio, I like to use it, And LingQ is just perfect for that. And I feel that, it's really going to help data access on the phone. Not even mentioning that. And I want to give a shout out to Sterling, which has been really very, very precious in bridging that gap, right? And saying, we have something, right, which is Sterling. But at the same time, having SQLC is going to help developers who maybe are not totally aware that there is an open source solution, which is Sterling, or maybe who just cannot use it, because we have that case very often, right? I have some people writing to me about MVVM Lite and telling me, oh, yeah, and by the way, I cannot use it like that. So usually what I say is that I tell them, okay, just take the source code and put it in your own app. I don't care. Or I don't mind. I do care, but I don't mind. But yeah, some people just cannot use the open source, and that's the reality as it is now, right?
Yes, I think the link is exciting in itself. For me, it's particularly exciting. Paul Betts and I are writing a book called Programming with Reactive Extensions.
You're
and
a big
link.
Fan of that, right?
I'm a big fan of Reactive Extensions, and I'm a big believer that Reactive Extensions are going to be very important for Windows Phone.
Yep.
And having link on the as a first class operation on the phone mm-hmm. is going, I think, to open up reactive extensions as a much less alien, much less intimidating technology for Windows Phone programmers. And mm-hmm. what that brings for asynchronous Windows Phone operations is, I think, is going to be very positive.
That's a great point. I did look into reactive UI and the reactive extensions and all that. And I have to say I have a lot of respect for Paul Betts. He did an amazing work with his reactive UI framework, which is basically an MVVM solution but based on the reactive extensions. And I did chat with him already a couple of times. I was very sorry that Microsoft didn't bring him here. And by the way, next time you have two, right?
And if it's up to me, absolutely, guaranteed.
He's really a good guy, and I'm actually looking towards making MVVM Lite a little bit friendlier to that, because he just did a blog post on how to use MVVM Lite with reactive extensions. Well, basically what he does is that if you have MVVM Lite in your application already, which is this open source framework that I do, right? It's very easy to add reactivity, or you know, to make it reactive by just modifying a few objects, etc. And I think the goal would be cool if we can make it even easier, and that you don't even have to modify those objects, but you just take them as is. So I want to work with him on that. But the reactive thing is just a different way of thinking, and I think we see that a lot in .NET nowadays. Also with the new asynchronous, the new asynchronous programming style, which is coming in .NET, right? We are not talking about the phone anymore here in .NET. Where what you achieve with that is making things which are really hard, like multi-threading or, you know, asynchronous and everything, things which are really hard, you suddenly make them easier and more fluent and easier to grasp, right? And more natural, especially. Because, you know, the goal, I mean, I keep saying to people, programming actually is pretty boring, right? Unless you do new stuff, you don't want to do the repetitive things all the time, right? So anything which does that easier, anything which makes you spend less time in debugger to try to understand what happens is welcomed, actually. This is time that you gain with your family eventually, right?